If you brought your Bible and you want to follow along this morning, be turning to John chapter 8. John chapter 8. Last week we started a brand new series on what would it look like to live your life in view of time being such a precious commodity. We looked at Psalm 90 and verse 12, where we were taught to number our days so that we might gain a heart of wisdom. The idea of becoming wise in light of looking at our life and realizing how brief it really is. And I want to ask you, as we looked at that last week, and you think about the idea of realizing that the only moment that we have is this moment right now. If this is the only moment that we have, what are you doing with it right now? If this is the only opportunity that we have to be together as a family this morning, right now, this is it. There's nothing else been promised to us. This is the last chance that we have to be together. What are we doing with this time? What would be different about this time together? How would you view what we just did together any differently? How would you feel different about being here and being able to worship together? What if this was it? And what if we could live every day with that same type of mentality, that same type of attitude? What type of relationships would we have with people? What would we talk about? What would we involve ourselves in? What would we become concerned about? What would we let bother us? What would we find ourselves disagreeing over? If this was it, if this was all we had, I hope that things would truly be different. I hope that we would realize how special and blessed this moment is that we have together. That the opportunity that we have to worship and to sing and to pray and to share is something that we should never take for granted. That the people that you sit next to right now, your spouse, your friends, your children, your family, are people that love you dearly and that are people that you want to squeeze a little bit tighter and you want to hold their hand a little bit longer. I would hope that when we gather around a table like we did just a minute ago, and appreciate Mike's comments so much, to think about what exactly took place 2,000 years ago, and to realize that if this is the only moment that we have, and this is the only opportunity that we have to come together, that we're not promised another day or another opportunity, that this is it, that we pour everything we've got into this moment. Into this service. How different would you sing? How different would you pray? How different would you read these verses that we're about to read? If in reality, because I believe it is, this is all we've got. This moment, this day, this opportunity to worship. This is it. So in light of that, what would be different about you? What would be different about your life? What would be different about your focus right now? Interestingly enough, there's a ton of people who've spent a lot of time studying what happens to people when they hear that they do not have long to live. And for the child of God, that for us should be every day of our life, because we no longer live according to ourselves. We're living according to God. So we live as resurrected people who are living like we are dying, because we've already died to ourselves. But for people who hear this, people begin to study what people are most concerned about. And I was surprised to read several different studies this past week of people who researched individuals who heard, hey, you've only got a week to live, a month to live, a couple of years to live. And then the research that was done was to ask them, what are they most concerned about? Overwhelmingly, I was surprised at this. Overwhelmingly, what people said they were most concerned about and what they would want to do with the remainder of their time was to spend time with people that they love. That they would want to spend time with the people that they care most about. It wasn't about spiritual things. That was number two, actually. After they would spend time with people that they love and that they care about, they would then turn their attention to their spiritual lives and to make sure everything was right with God. But it was amazing to hear that people, when they realize that they only have a limited amount of time to live, when we learn to teach, when we learn to number our days, that heart of wisdom allows us to realize how important it is, the relationships that we have in our life. So this morning, I want us to look at that a little bit. And I want us to look at John chapter 8. And I want us to notice a couple things. We were there a couple of weeks ago, actually a couple of months ago. But I want you to notice again, and maybe with a little bit of a new vision and a new perspective, what's taking place in this passage that we've looked at many, many times before. You know, in John chapter 8, we have before us in these few verses the story of the scribes and the Pharisees trying to do what scribes and Pharisees did really, really well. So I want you to notice this beginning in verse, let's pick up in verse 3 of John chapter 8. The scribes and Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in adultery, and placing her in the midst, they said to him, "Teacher, this woman has been caught in the act of adultery. Now in the law of Moses commanded us to stone such a woman. So what do you say?" I mean, you almost get the trick question. What do you say? Now, there's already a couple of things that stand out to me. Have you ever wondered where the man was in this situation? Why it was just the woman who was, you know, it takes two. But nevertheless, you have the scribes and the Pharisees who were absolutely wonderful at doing what they're doing. They were wonderful at teaching the law and trying to hold people accountable to the law. They did that well. But they also did something else very well. They were constantly trying to trick Jesus. They were trying to put him in situations where the only answer that he could come up with would be one that would violate some kind of law, and then they could go, "Aha, see, he's done something wrong." So they bring this woman, and they bring this woman in front of Jesus, and they ask him, say, "Hey, you know what? She's been guilty of adultery. The law of Moses says we must stone her. What do you say?" And now Jesus is caught between two laws here. He's caught between the law of Moses, which says that she must be stoned according to the law of Moses. But the problem is that he can't carry out or sanction a stoning in a city that is under Roman occupation, because Roman law prohibits that unless a Roman official says that it's okay. So if he basically responds and says, "Yes, stone her," he's going to be violating the Roman law. If he says, "No, let her go free," he's going to be violating the law of Moses. And the scribes and Pharisees are going, "Yes, we've got him. There's no way out for Jesus this time." Notice his response. Verse 6, they said this to test him, that they might have some charge to bring against him. Jesus bent down and wrote with his finger on the ground. And as they continued, notice this, they continued to press him. They continued to ask him. And notice, as he stood up and he said to them, notice, "Let him who is without sin among you be the first to throw a stone at her." Wait a minute. Jesus, she's guilty of adultery. She needs to be stoned. And notice what Jesus says again. "Let him who is without sin among you be the first to throw a stone at her." Once more, he bent down and wrote on the ground. But when they heard it, they went away one by one, beginning with the older ones, and Jesus was left alone with the woman standing before him. An amazing thing happens here. Here are these people who are trying to test Jesus. They've caught a woman who is guilty. There's this awful conflict that's raging here. You have this guilty party who's done something wrong, and then you have these people who are ready to stone this woman, and they're using her as a bait to try to trick Jesus into a way to test him so that he can say something that they can find fault in him. And Jesus' response is amazing. And it's the same response that he has to every single one of us this morning. Because what happens in this situation, and you see this, every single person walks away one by one, beginning with the older people first, It was in their own way and admission of their own guilt. And then he turns to this lady and he says, what does he say, church, right there? What word does he use? What does he say? Woman. He says to her, woman. Now I don't use that word very often. I don't speak to the lady and say, hey, woman. That doesn't sound very good, does it? I'm not about to turn to Melanie and say, hey, woman, can you do this? I'd be in trouble. She's in the nursery this morning, thank goodness, watching kids. But that's what he says. But I want you to notice something, because the word there that he uses was actually a word that carried with it a term of endearment. Doesn't make sense in our language. But do you realize what Jesus referred to his mother on the cross as? What did he say? He said, woman, behold your son, and son, behold your mother. Now, I want you to notice this. Back in John chapter 2, the wedding feast of Cana, they've run out of wine, and Jesus speaks directly to his mother, and he says, woman. Now, I can't imagine what this lady had been called up until this point in time. I can't imagine what they must have been saying about her and to her and calling her. I can't imagine it. But Jesus in this moment uses a term of endearment and says, woman. And it's interesting to notice what he says. Verse 10, where are they? Has no one condemned you? She said, no one, Lord. And Jesus said, neither do I condemn you. Go, and from now on, sin no more. Now, here's what I want us to look at this morning for a little while. This idea of forgiveness and belief. Because you see Jesus doing something that is so paramount to our relationships. Jesus forgives her, and not only does he forgive her, he then tells her to do what? He tells her to go and what? Sin no more. He forgives her, and then he has this belief in her that then she can go and she can do something different. That there's hope for her. There's this belief in her. So I want us to look at that idea a little bit, because as we dig through this, the first thing that I want us to look at is I need relationships. I need relationships, even though they are messy. And they are messy. It's the way we've been wired. It's been wired into your DNA, into my DNA, that we need relationships. That's the way God created us. He created us with a desire to be connected to one another. And if we only have today, and if we only have this moment, and if we only have this time together, and we recognize that relationships are something that are so, so, so important to us, then there are things that we need to work on. Relationships are tough. You know, being in full-time ministry now for, I don't know, 16, 17 years, four full-time works, two part-time works before that, I've realized something. Y'all ready for this? Realized something. People are not normal. See, you don't even, people are not normal. We are all weird. I'm weird, you're weird, we're not normal. We all like different things. We all have different personalities. We all get irritated at different things. We all like certain things certain ways at certain times and certain temperatures. How many of you right now think it's too hot in here? Who? I had one. How many of y'all think it's too cold in here? How many of y'all think it's just right in here? How many of you don't care? How many of you don't want to raise your hand again? How many of you like the robot on the stage? How many of you can't wait for VB? I mean, you get what I'm going? It's crazy. We're weird. We're messy, messy people. We're sinners who struggle, and we work through things in different ways and at different rates and at different times. And here's the thing. If we're going to deepen our relationships, we first of all got to realize how much we need them. And not only do we need relationships, we need healthy relationships. We need to have vibrant relationships in our life with our spouse, with our children, with our family, with our church family. When we have relationship issues, it robs us of the life that God has created us to live. It robs us of joy, and ultimately, it keeps us from living the life that God wants us to live. I want you to dig through some of this because there's lots of different ways that we do this. Because relationships are messy, they struggle. I want you to notice Matthew chapter 7 real quick. Matthew chapter 7, because one of the neat things about what happened with Jesus is that he believed in this woman, that there was something deeper about her. There was something out there that was much more better for her. It was a better way to live. And it's something that every single one of us should have in each other. And that is this belief. It's the hope. It's that reason why marriages work, because we make mistakes. We hurt each other. We forgive each other. But we have this hope that things are always going to get better. It's why churches work. It's because we're messy people. We're not normal. And we make mistakes and we forgive each other and we have the belief that God can do great things in our midst. And whenever that breaks down, we lose sight of what's really important. Because if today is all we have, and the relationships in this room are all we have right now, and we recognize that we need every single one of them, and not only do we need every single one of them, but we need them to be healthy, we'll want to do whatever it takes to clean them up. So how do you do that? Well, one of the ways you can do that is begin by admitting your own faults and mistakes. Matthew chapter 7, Jesus is teaching. And I don't know, if you've ever done this, you need get out a list of paper and kind of write down your own faults. It's a really humbling experience. But I would encourage you to do it. Lists are amazing things. They shed light on denial. When you make a list of things that you want to change about yourself, it sheds light on the things that you normally deny about yourself. When you make a list of the things that you struggle with, your own mistakes and your own faults, it sheds light on the things that you normally deny about yourself that are weaknesses in your life. But I also want you to make another list. And I don't know if you like to make a list. Make a list of the significant people in your life. And I'm going to guarantee you this. Some of those people are sitting in this room right now. Who are the people that you want to sit on the front row of your funeral? Some of them are sitting in this room right now. How many of those people have heard from you how much you love them? Guys, I want us to do this for a second. It is okay for guys to say, I love you to another guy. Let's practice this, guys. You ready? Can you say, I? Guys, say, love you. I love you. Guys, can you say that? Ladies, what do y'all think about that? Is that pretty pathetic? Can we do that again, guys? Let's say it together. I love you. Go ahead. I still don't believe you. Guys, whatever you do, don't go up to another guy after church and go, I love you. You think about it. There are some wonderful relationships in this room between guys. Guys that love to fish together. Guys that love to go sing together. Guys that love to just goof off together. Guys that love to go play golf together. Guys that love to go get on the boat and go ride around the lake together. Guys that just like to get together and have coffee. If you only had today and you had this moment, how many of you would want to tell that guy friend of yours, man, you know what? I know this is going to sound weird, but I only have right now. I don't know how long I'm going to live. Man, I want you to know something. I love you, man. Girls, y'all don't struggle with that, do you? Y'all don't, but us guys do. If we would start by making a list of our own mistakes, it would create a humble attitude in our own life and then would help us be able to reach out and build relationships with other people. I want you to notice the second thing. This idea of a character of love, characterized by love. How do we become people who dispense forgiveness and belief? How do we become people who dispense forgiveness and belief? If we only have today and we only have this moment and all of a sudden priorities become enlightened to us, it becomes a whole lot easier to recognize. You think about this woman. This woman right here in John chapter 8 thinks she's about to die. She thinks this is the end. And not only is it the end, but she's about to die a sinner. And in that moment, everything changes for her. And she has this moment with her Savior where she realizes that he's not there to condemn her, that he's there to forgive her, and that he believes in her, that then she can go and sin no more. How do we take that same attitude and apply it to the lives and to the relationships of the people that we come in contact with? How is it that we can take that and apply that to our spouses and to our children and to our parents and to the people that are sitting in the pew with you and to the people that are sitting over here and up there and down here? How do we become people who just dispense forgiveness and belief into other people's lives? Well, I want to tell you, let's go look at 1 John chapter 3. 1 John chapter 3, beginning in verse 16. 1 John chapter 3, beginning in verse 16. By this we know love, that he laid down his life for us. We ought to lay down our lives for the brothers. But if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide in him? Little children, let us not love in word or talk, but in deed and in truth. Let us not love in, notice this, word or talk, but in deed and truth. Let me ask you this. Who are some people, what are some relationships that are in your life that you need to clean up? If this is all we've got, and it is, what are some relationships in your life that you need to clean up? I want you to try something for just a second. How many of you are wearing a ring this morning? Are you wearing a ring on a finger? Take it off. Take it off whatever hand you had it on. Do it right now. Let's do this together. Take it off whatever hand you've got it on and put it on another finger on the other hand and leave it there just for a few minutes. All right? Did you do it? How many of you are wearing a watch this morning? You got a watch on? Take the watch off of whatever wrist you've got it on right now and put it on the other wrist right now. Go ahead and do it right now. If you don't have a ring, you don't have a watch, take off your left shoe and put it on your right foot. Take off your right shoe and put it on your left foot. There's a point to this, I promise. And it's not to make you look goofy. How does it feel? How does that feel wearing a ring that you normally wear on your left hand, on your right hand? And a watch you normally wear on your left or your right? How does it feel? Does it feel normal? Yes or no? No, it feels weird. Here's the deal. The relationships that you need to clean up in your life, do not take the ring off of this hand and put it back onto this hand or the watch off of this wrist and put it back on this wrist until you make that relationship right. Let this uncomfortable feeling be a reminder. Because here's what happens to us sometimes. This becomes comfortable. Just like sin becomes comfortable. And we get so used to it that it's just natural that we have relationship issues and that we have problems and that we have struggles. So when you do this and it's uncomfortable, that's what sin should feel like in our life. That's what gossip should feel like in our life. That's what anger and malice and sin and awful thoughts and hard-heartedness and that's the way it should feel in our life. It should feel weird. It shouldn't fit us as Christians. It shouldn't just slide on like it always slides on the right finger, on the right wrist. It should feel odd. And here's the deal. If you'll leave something on you that feels uncomfortable enough, it will motivate you to clean things up. I want you to notice the last thing this morning real quick, and it's back in John 8. The latter part of John 8, as we're reading those few verses, Jesus says to her to go and sin what? No more. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 13, Paul's writing, it's a beautiful, beautiful chapter of putting off and putting on, but it's a challenge to forgive one another. What if our challenge last week was to live like we're dying? The challenge this week would be to go and to love like we're forgiven. And to truly let our forgiven spirit motivate us to love people because we understand how blessed and lucky we are to have been forgiven by God. Guys, we don't have forever. If you had an hour to live, how many of you would wait till the minute 59 and 59 seconds to say I'm sorry to somebody? If you had an hour to live, how many of you would wait till the minute 59 and 59 seconds to decide to make your life right with God? If you had an hour to live, how many of you would wait till the 59th minute and the 59th second to say, I want to become a baptized believer? Why would you not go ahead if you have an hour to live and in that first second of that first moment, say, I'm sorry? So that you can spend the next 59 minutes in harmony, in bliss, enjoying whatever little bit of time you have left, knowing that you are right with your God, right with your brother and sister, that you can live this life with joy and hope, knowing that you've done everything you can because you realize that our days are numbered. It doesn't make any sense. Which is why it doesn't make any sense this morning for us to not leave here the same way that we came. Here's the thing. If this was your last worship service, and this was your last opportunity to worship and to sing and to be together and to pray, I don't believe that you would leave the very same way that you came. And I don't think you would want to leave anything undone. So this is it. Maybe. This is it, this side of heaven for some of us, maybe for all of us. But here's the deal. If that is the case, let's be uncomfortable with sin. Let's be uncomfortable with the relationships that we haven't cleaned up. And let's use some visual reminders of things like rings on wrong fingers and watches on the wrong wrist to motivate us to want to make things right. Church, here's the thing. I believe in us. Do you? Don't sell stock to anybody because they're not going to buy it. Do you believe in us? Yes or no? Yeah. Let me tell you who else believes in us. Do you know who else believes in us? God does. It's one of the reasons why he sent his son. I'm so grateful that Jake read John 3:16. That for God so loved the world that he sent his only son to die for you and to die for me. Here's the greatest hope that we all have. We too, like that woman, at some point in time in our life, and maybe even this morning, have found ourselves guilty in sin, dying. In this moment, right now, we have an opportunity to hear God say, I forgive you. Go and sin no more. The question for all of us is, are you ready to be forgiven? Are you ready to make it right with a brother or a sister? Are you ready to become a follower of Jesus? Are you ready to confess him as your Lord, to repent, to be baptized? Are you ready? This is it. If this is the only chance you get, do something different with it while we stand and sing.